Hello and welcome to the latest podcast in our series, Living with Diabetes, brought to you by Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. I'm Claire Levy, and in this episode, I'm returning to a subject we covered a year ago, the diagnosis of type 1 in infants and young people, following the tragic death of Lila Story from DKA, just after her second birthday. At the time, we talked to her distraught father, John, who was speaking publicly in detail for the first time. He launched a petition calling on the UK Parliament to debate and introduce more robust guidance for healthcare professionals to make it mandatory to test for blood glucose and ketones when young people presented with any of the classic symptoms of thirst, frequent need of the toilet, being consistently tired, or rapid weight loss. These are known as the four T's. I talked to him again recently on the first anniversary of Lila's tragic death to discover what progress he's made.
It's still going on now. People are still getting diagnosed in diabetic ketoacidosis, even though Lila's Law is a national campaign. And that is really, really frightening. You know, I'm playing so many roles. I'm playing advocate, I'm playing activist, I'm playing businessman, I'm playing fundraiser, I'm playing workman, I'm playing daddy, and it is tiring. It is tiring, but it gives me focus, it gives me a purpose, it gives me the drive and determination to push change and remember Lila with even more pride, if that's even possible. Because every time something happens or I see any little win along the way, I just look at a picture of Lila and said, "You're doing it again, girl."
Hear more from John's story coming up next.
Views, information or opinions contained in podcasts do not necessarily represent the opinions, standards or policies of DRWF. The inclusion of details about products or services does not indicate DRWF endorsement of them. The aim of podcasts is to educate and inform, and we endeavour to ensure that the information provided in them is accurate. It's not a substitute for medical or health advice from a healthcare professional who's aware of the facts and circumstances of your individual situation. We always recommend that advice be sought from your GP or diabetes nurse before making any changes to medication or before using any products or services referenced by DRWF. Neither DRWF nor any of its employees or owners shall be held liable or responsible for the accuracy or completeness for any errors or omissions in podcasts or for any damage you may suffer as a result of failing to seek competent medical or health advice from a professional who is familiar with your situation.
A year ago, John's story shared the tragic details of the death of his daughter Lila from DKA with undiagnosed type 1.
My mum picked her up from nursery. I just took one look at her and I was a bit scared, to be honest. She looked like she'd lost weight. Her eyes looked a bit sunken. And I just immediately said to Emma, I said, "There's something wrong with her." And for some reason, I just went, because normally, as the father, bumped your head or you trapped your finger or anything like that, but like, "Get her to hospital, get him to hospital." But I was really calm and collected about it, and I said, "There's something wrong with her. You need to get her to the doctors." And I said doctors for some reason. So Emma tries ringing the doctors. Emma explained what's been going on. She's having more wet nappies. She's not been her usual self. She's started drinking more. And she's tired. She's not been a jolly self. They said, "Oh, you're going to need to come back in the morning. You know, ring up at 8 o'clock in the morning, see if we can get a same-day appointment." So Emma goes to work. But on the way to work, she rings the doctors. We kept her off nursery. She was falling asleep in the appointment. Checked her sats, checked her breathing, checked her pulse. She said her pulse is a bit high, but that might be normal if she's got a virus. Took a look in her throat. Checked other parts of her. Checked her skin for meningitis. And then said, "I'll just take another look in your throat." And she saw white spots on the throat. And she said, "Well, right, this is what it is. She's got tonsillitis. Get some amoxicillin, you know, the banana stuff, and she should
pick up. If she doesn't pick up in the next 24 hours, then call 111 or take her to Children's A&E. As I started carrying her up the stairs at 5:30, she started calling out Mummy, and we was like, brilliant. You know, that's brilliant. The drugs are working, basically. That's what we thought. Sorry.
Don't apologise.
And I laid her down. Walked up the room, I was like, what am I doing? Walked back in, gave her a kiss and went, night-night, darling, I love you. And that were my last words to her. Emma woke up about 10 o'clock, changed her nappy. She last checked on her between 1:30 and 2 a.m. I woke up about 3:45 in the morning and I found Lila, lifeless and colourless. I knew at that point she'd already gone, and I think she passed away only 30 minutes after Emma last checked on her. Paramedics were wonderful. They did all they could. Unfortunately, her official time of death was 5:25 a.m. And the cause of death was undiagnosed type 1 diabetes, diabetic ketoacidosis, a gastrointestinal bleed, and COVID-19. When I had the discussion with consultant paediatrician, I said, how on earth, when we were told that she had tonsillitis and 16 hours later, she's dead. She'd only been 2-3 weeks. How someone so bright and vibrant had just rapidly declined like that, when all it would have taken would have been a simple dip test of a urine off a nappy, or, you know, the finger prick. When I held her in my arms, you know, afterwards, I said, look, Daddy's going to tell you all the Daddy stuff you need to hear. But I need to tell you this first. I will fight with every fibre of my being to ensure we find out why this has happened to you, and that I'm going to make sure that it's never going to happen to another child again.
At the time, we also talked to Professor Parth Narendran about the challenges of diagnosing type 1 in young children.
So type 1 is a sort of chronic condition. It affects about 3 in 1,000 people in the UK. So in children, over 90% of diabetes is type 1. And in adults, about 10% of diabetes is type 1, just to put that into context. The real challenge here, Claire, is that often type 1 presents when there's something else going on. And people can mistake the illness just to the something else that's not going on and not recognize that there's type 1 just, you know, simmering under the background. And that's how these acute presentations are missed.
He also outlined early results and implications from the Early Surveillance for Autoimmune Diabetes Study, or ELSA for short. It's a piece of research which tests young people for antibodies that reveal whether they're at risk of developing type 1.
This misdiagnosis doesn't appear to be changing. So by doing a screening program where, or this is a research study, remember, we can screen people who feel perfectly well, but pick up this immune process many, many years before. And that gives you time to do the studies, to inform them how long they're going to take before they need insulin. It gives time to prepare for a life with insulin. And it reduces the risk of DK significantly. And a recent Italian study showed that the DK rates, you know, which classically are about 20% in most countries, it went down to zero because people knew this was coming. And this matches studies from Germany and the States, where one of the most effective, or the most effective way to reduce DK at presentation, is through screening.
John's story launched an online petition in the hope that more than 100,000 signatures would trigger a debate in Parliament to ensure that anyone presenting with classic symptoms of the four T's are automatically tested. Sarah Boole, MP, who has type 1 and sits on the all-party parliamentary group on diabetes, has subsequently supported John's campaign. She gave us her reaction at the time.
I think there is a campaign that needs to be run there, because I know they do it where they ask now with, say, for example, sepsis, where you've got to just say, could it be sepsis? And equally, I think that's the thought process that has to go through needs to be, could it be diabetes? Is it worth just doing a check in the background? Especially, as you said, with poor Lila, they thought she had another virus, and actually it turned out she had this undiagnosed behind the scenes, and that's what ultimately caught her. And so I would like it to be that first thought of, could it be? Let's just check, because as I said with me, people were like, oh, no, you can't have it. Like, no way would you have it. And so it's fighting against that attitude to be like, no, you can. And actually just look for these extra signs. And it's better. I would much rather them do a quick test and, you know, rule it out than miss it for just a lack of thought. So that's something I would like to see rolled out more with the NHS.
And what's your involvement been with the early screening programme, ELSA?
So I've just been following that more than anything. So I said what I'm trying to do at the moment is we have an all-party parliamentary group in Parliament for diabetes, where we're looking at all strands. And the one area I'm particularly focusing on, as I said, is having a pilot for, I'd love to see a pilot screening for type 1. Obviously, ELSA at this point has been fantastic, looked at over 20,000 children and been able to diagnose or sort of look at them early doors and see. And I would like to see that extended. It's very difficult at this stage to exactly pinpoint, because we all come on at different stages. But I think the ELSA study has been fantastic. The government is looking, and I want them, because it's just a research programme, I'd like that to be expanded further into clinical, proper clinical experience there.
John ultimately achieved over 120,000 signatures, and MPs gathered in March to discuss John's proposals to introduce Lila's Law.
Irene Campbell to move the motion.
To move that this House has considered e-petition 728677 relating to type 1 diabetes testing for infants. I would like to start by thanking the petitioner, Mr. John Storey, for starting this petition and telling us the devastating story of what happened to his daughter Lila, who tragically died when the warning signs of type 1 diabetes were missed. The petition is called Funding So All Infants Are Offered Type 1 Diabetes Testing in Routine Care, so that type 1 diabetes testing is carried out when any symptoms appear, and to include information on type 1 diabetes in the Red Book for babies. His campaign for Lila's Law also asked for public awareness campaigns to help parents recognise the signs of type 1 diabetes and for increased accountability in primary care. The aim of the proposed law includes the introduction of a test, don't guess framework to guarantee timely access to care and resources to stop children from reaching the point of life-threatening diabetic ketoacidosis, or DKA.
Thank you very much, Sir Alec. And I would like to pay enormous tribute and to thank Lila's parents, John and Emma Storey, who have campaigned so passionately and powerfully at such a time of unimaginable grief. It is truly inspiring and will help ensure, we hope, that no other families will suffer as they have. And I'm so sorry, and offer Mr. and Mrs. Storey my deepest sympathies as well, as no child or their family should be left down in this way.
I thank the Minister for giving way. And I should declare that I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at the age of 3, and so I cannot begin to imagine the pain that Mr. and Mrs. Storey and families in the public gallery and also watching this have felt, particularly my constituent Levi, who lost her beloved son Eli at the age of 2 after 5 misdiagnoses of viruses and infection. Can I ask the Minister, please, that she will undertake that when future guidance is being drafted, it will emphasise to clinicians that infections and viruses, as we've heard today, can not only be a symptom of type 1 diabetes, it can sometimes be a trigger of type 1 diabetes, so that the clinicians have the understanding, we hope, to avoid the tragic losses that we have heard this afternoon.
Thank you so much, and I thank the former Secretary of State for Health for her intervention, and I wasn't aware that she herself was type 1 also, and the case she brings before us of Levi is so similar and pertinent to, you know, what we are discussing today. And I hope the work currently being taken forward across diagnosis and awareness shows the seriousness with which this issue is being taken. And I'm pleased that John and Emma Storey will be meeting the Secretary of State for Health to discuss this further tomorrow, along with your local constituency MP, the member for Hull North, who I know has been in this chamber for this debate today. And I'm sure that that will be a very emotional and very powerful meeting for Mr. and Mrs. Storey themselves, and I wish them well. And I want to, again, in closing, pay tribute to them for everything they've done in Lila's name to try and ensure that no other family follows in their footsteps.
The question is that this House has considered e-petition 728677 relating to type 1 diabetes testing for infants. As many of the opinions say, aye.
Aye.
The contrary, no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it.
It's been a long journey for John's family and supporters. So it was great to catch up with him again recently, on the first anniversary of Lila's tragic death.
Yeah, but it was very raw back at that time. I mean, you learn to get battle-hardened. But yeah, there's... There seems to have been a lot of significant developments, but there's been that many. It's hard to keep up and remember what you've done. Originally, Lila's Law was set out to make sure that testing is mandatory for type 1 diabetes when a child is displaying any signs of the 40s, which are toileting, thirsty, tiredness and thinning. But yeah, and it was that, and it was about inclusion of type 1 diabetes in the Red Book. And, you know, getting more public and professional awareness of not just the 40s itself, but type 1 diabetes. And then, obviously, it snowballed over time to... I mean, it's important to note as well that Lila's Law is not it's not about screening. It's about getting it right first time in primary care, tackling variation. And that strengthens the argument for a screening programme afterwards, you know, so I am for a screening program, but yeah, it's important to reflect that Lila's Law is not about screening, it's about testing at the point of contact where symptoms warrant. So yeah, it's evolved. I mean, it's we've got more on the education side. I mean, I've been liaising with the General Pharmaceutical Council, MHRA, the Medicines and Healthcare Regulatory Authority. I've been in touch with, there's been that many I've forgotten.
Well, you've contacted GPs, haven't you?
Yeah, I've officially broke the 7,000 barrier now.
Because you had a bit of blockage going on, I think, didn't you?
Yeah. They've been identifying me as spam. Strange how it took like 6,500 emails in to identify me as spam. But it's a bit of a personal crusade that, I mean, I am working with NHS England and prominent members in the field. But I feel that we need to be infiltrating from all angles. So if a GP surgery gets an email from me, who has been directly affected by the loss of our beautiful child, I think it hones in a little bit more and harnesses the need to get that awareness out there. And I've mentioned this to somebody before. I've noticed that I was getting quite terse replies before. Now I'm getting replies from GP surgeries that are in support of the Lila's Law campaign. I mean, there was one, I don't know if you saw it, but I posted about it, that one surgery in Birmingham and their primary care network are introducing Lila's boxes within their practices, in which they'll have the kits readily available to test, and up-to-date information as well, which I thought was pretty incredible. I actually shed a tear over that. It was a wonderful concept. And if everybody can in primary care can take that on. What worries me with some replies I get is, although we are not, although we've got no contractual obligation to stop these, we do. So I start scratching my head, because I have been working with the CQC. There we go, there's another one I emailed. And they've updated their Mythbuster information to say, are you, you know, we expect you to include blood glucose monitoring kits and ketone detection. This contractual obligation thing is very worrying. Never mind contractual obligations. What about your moral obligation? Because like I say, a little finger prick saves a life. And obviously I've been working closely with NICE as well. The fact that they've been receptive around the campaign and the demands for changes within the guidelines is brilliant. But again, I wasn't 100% happy with what they said, because they're talking about you should suspect diabetic ketoacidosis in a child even if they don't have type 1 diabetes. You should be suspecting diabetic ketoacidosis as a last resort. You need to be saying, have they got polydipsia or have they got polyuria or have they got excessive weight loss, or rather than and, because that sets a dangerous precedent.
And so your relationship with Professor Partha Kaur has really blossomed, hasn't it? And he's such a champion, isn't he?
And he is a wonderful man. And what I like about Partha is, look, is very forthright and outspoken, but he gets things done, and that's what I like. You know, I'm a little bit like Partha in the respect of, I will be, when I know something's right, I will fight. And if that means upsetting a few people along the way, I don't care. Because the sooner people realise that in primary care, that once somebody is showing signs of type 1 diabetes, they need to be recognising it's a medical emergency, they need to be recognising the need for immediate testing, and they need to be recognising the need to send that child, or adult for that matter, to the correct department within a hospital. None of this, I think, because I get these emails and messages all the time from people saying that they've took the child into the surgery, they're suspecting that they've got type 1 diabetes, and come back in a few days, we'll take bloods. That's not good enough. That's not an instant response. And it astounds me at the lack of knowledge from GPs.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
You're listening to Living with Diabetes, the DRWF podcast. In this edition, we're talking to John Story about the diagnosis of type 1 in infants and young people, following the tragic death of his daughter Lila just after her second birthday a year ago. An inquest concluded she had died in her sleep from DKA, resulting from undiagnosed type 1. The coroner called for a wider approach and education about the condition.
Type 1 diabetes, especially in children, has to be on GP's radar, because, you know, it's one of, if not the biggest chronic condition in children. And that needs the need to have that at the forefront of the minds.
Mm-hmm.
But we are breaking down boundaries. We are barriers, sorry. You know, there are a lot of GPs who are starting to become a lot more receptive. But what we need to be doing is we need 100% of GPs being on board with this.
Mm.
Are you going to? No, I don't think we are. But, and that's part of the reason why I'm really trying to get NICE guidelines legislated rather than just a page you can flick through in a book. Because if we don't get these legislated, you're still going to get people slipping through the net, and it's not good enough.
And you had your debate in Parliament, which was amazing, to get that petition, which I think Partha really helped with, didn't he?
Yeah.
Over the line.
Yeah.
How was that day?
Draining. Because, we had to be in Manchester in the morning to do BBC Breakfast interview. Then we had to shoot straight from there down to London, you know, get into our hotel. Then we had to go straight to number 10 to do a petition handing. And then we had to go straight from there to Westminster Hall. And I had to meet protesters outside as well, peaceful, I may add. But what was quite poignant, and I didn't notice at the time, and someone had took a picture that there was a rainbow crashing into St. Stephen's Tower, Big Ben. And I saw that back, and I thought, because she was with us, you know, and it was an incredible feeling when I saw it back. As we know, the eyes had it. But the thing is, when it's a petitions debate in Westminster Hall, it doesn't automatically directly change the law, but what it does is it gives the MPs within that chamber at that time the power, and it strengthens their bid to push and lobby for Lila's law. Mm. And you know, I've been speaking with, obviously Diana Johnson's been wonderful for a while, and I have spoke to her team since Wes Streeting has resigned, because I said I don't want to lose momentum on this. You know, we've got to keep poking the bear. You know, because I ain't going to go away. I don't care if we go through 7 health secretaries.
Well, you said this was your way of dealing with it, that you were going to fight like hell and make sure her life made a difference, and you really have, haven't you? And so, you know, what happens now that Wes Streeting has stepped down? Have you got to go back? Will Dame Diana help you?
Yeah, she is. They're already agreeing to that. I think they're going to try and hopefully set me up with a meeting with James Murray, who I believe is the new health secretary. I'll get him up to speed very, very quickly. The thing is, this is not my campaign or our family's campaign. This is a campaign for all the people that have been misdiagnosed and, you know, and some have died as well. Quite a few have died. This is a campaign for them to end this ridiculousness, really. The more we wait and the more health ministers or health secretaries we have to talk to, the more this goes on. It's still going on now. People are still getting diagnosed in diabetic ketoacidosis, even though Lila's Law is a national campaign. And that is really, really frightening.
I've seen messages from parents thanking you because it helped them get their child diagnosed. They realised what was going on, probably before the GP.
There was, and I remind those people, thank you for your kind words, but it's Lila that's doing this. I've constantly said I am just her vessel. But, I got a story the other day. A lady who's working in Aldi, I think. Other supermarkets are available, obviously. But she accosted my mum, because my mum was, say, putting a shopping across the checkout. And she saw a Lila's Law pin badge and she said, "Oh, Lila's Law." She went, "Yeah." She went, Are you Lila's?" And she went, "Yeah, I'm Lila's nana." So she was like, Are you John's mum? Yeah. Tell him from me, thank you for everything he's doing, for raising awareness, because everyone's had enough of it. She said, "I think he's an absolutely wonderful man." And I turned around to my mum and said, "She obviously doesn't know me that well, does she?" But she told me the story that her grandson knew the signs through seeing the campaign or something. And a plane, that was on the way home from holiday on a plane, the plane got diverted to France and he was diagnosed in France.
Amazing.
So it's like, there'd have been a few disgruntled passengers on there, like, but at least it saved a life.
Saved a life, yeah.
For every time I hear that someone has been diagnosed in a timely manner, It does make me sob, you know. It makes me sob. I sob with pride, and you know, it's a testament to the work that Lila's instilled in me. It's even harder now I'm back at work as well on top, so there's another plate to spin there. But I find time. I'm not one of them people who has a verified account but gets a team to respond to people. I respond to people individually. Some I have to take more time over than others because of the severity of what they've wrote to me. But, you know, it just takes a little bit longer now to reply because I'm back at work and then I've got to do the family thing when I get home as well. And, you know, I'm playing so many roles. I'm playing advocate, I'm playing activist, I'm playing businessman, I'm playing fundraiser, I'm playing workman, I'm playing daddy, you know. And it is tiring. It is tiring, but it gives me focus, it gives me a purpose, it gives me the drive and determination to push change and remember Lila with even more pride, if that's even possible. Because every time something happens or I see or any little win along the way, I just look at a picture of Lila and say, "You're doing it again, girl," you know.
And how are the family? How's Emma and Jack?
Okay, yeah, they're okay. I mean, there is a hole in our lives now that can never be replaced. I never thought that this campaign would reach the levels it has, because I feel like now Lila has an extended family. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff bandied about community and things like that. I don't regard the Type 1 community as a community anymore. I regard them as an extended family, you know. There's a reason why they're called warriors. And, you know, I'm so, so proud that they've let me into the community and let me fight for them. There's so many people out there, Claire, that would have want to fight the way I've fought. But as a parent of a Type 1, it becomes a full-time job within itself. So not only are you a parent now, you're a full-time carer, then you've probably got work to do. Some might have to give up work because of the severity of the diagnosis at the time and how, you know. And that's another reason why we need to be getting it right first time in primary care, because the quicker and earlier you get diagnosed, we know it's not mega easy to manage, but if you catch it in time, it's much more easier to manage than being uncontrollable at times.
So maybe your work, and as you say, you're part of a team, a group, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, if people have got the ability to go, do you know what, I'm just going to go to hospital. I'm going to bypass the GP. Let's just go straight to A&E.
Yeah. Well, there's pros and cons to that. The pros are, if you're aware of the 40s, yes, by all means, you can do that. You can go into A&E. But what you need to be mindful of is, where are you taking them into A&E? Because there's still cases out there where a GP has referred that child to a hospital with suspected diabetes, and they've just been sat in a waiting room for 4 hours, slowly dying, well, before they get seen. So they need to be making sure that if they do take a child straight to hospital, you take them straight to the diabetes centre.
If it's open.
If it's open, yeah. Or children's A&E and say, look, I don't care what you say, I'm pretty adamant that this is type 1 diabetes. Please test for that first. And then you'll get that pathway of care.
And the thing is, they won't criticise you for coming in and getting it, you know, maybe it isn't diabetes. I think they'd rather see you with those concerns, and deal with it and say, well, we can test straight away.
We need to, and that's why I'm hoping that this is why I'm pushing these 4T posters around GP surgeries. And at first they used to think it was for them. Well, no, it's not for you, it's for the general public. It's for them to understand what the 4Ts are. It's for them to have that seed planted in their mind so they can go there and say, look, because how many parents... There'll be hundreds of thousands of parents out there still that don't know what the 4Ts are, you know, or, you know. So we need to be thinking... I mean, dare I say it, even think of 2Ts. If you wee more and you're drinking more, that's enough for me, pal. Yeah? Get to hospital. Or at least if you go to the doctor, say, I'm pretty sure it is, and they'll go, oh, no. Well, I'm insisting that you test. Otherwise, I'll make a complaint. The general pathway should be, because it's within guidelines, you go there, they suspect, and then they are, if they suspect it's type 1, they are supposed to send you to hospital under blue light conditions, not get a taxi, here's a note. You give them the note and you call an ambulance from the surgery and the ambulance takes you. It's within the guidelines.
It's an emergency.
It's a medical emergency, yeah. I'm meeting with NHS England.
Okay.
They are going to present to me with what they've been working on, which I find is wonderful. My personal... What I'm going to bring to the table is I feel that what it's amazing that NHS England have set up a national diabetes team and they are working with me to try and improve outcomes and everything. And let's tackle this variation. The work I'm doing is tiring. You know, I've got about 4,800 emails to go in GP surgeries. But what we need something permanent. Not something that will be a 6-month fad and go away. So what I'm going to say to NHS England is, let's carry on with this infiltration, because they got it right with sepsis, didn't they? Mm. So what we need, we need that underground infiltration going on. But what I also believe we need is a clinical lead on tackling variation in type 1 diabetes around the nation.
So what can people do? Listening to this podcast, what are you asking them to do? Do they want to follow you on Facebook to get involved with their GP? What's the sort of actions they can take?
Yeah, you can follow me on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram. To those listening, yeah, contact your GP, reference Lyders Law, ask them if they've got kits in situ, are they easily accessible, are strips in date, you know. I display in the poster. Contact your local councils and say, is there any chance we can get these in public toilets, these posters in public toilets and things like that? Anywhere that's public facing. Mm. And you know, obviously thank you so much for having me again, Claire. It's
absolute pleasure. And anything we can do to support the work, then we're looking to do it.
Thanks, Claire.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
You're listening to Living with Diabetes, the DRWF podcast. Our thanks to John Story for updating us on his campaign. I hope you found this helpful and informative. MP Sarah Bull did table a motion following the debate, but unfortunately ran out of time for a second reading in the last parliamentary session. However, on a more positive note, this summer, 2026, the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, NICE, has updated its NG18 guidance following John's lobbying of Parliament, the NHS and GP surgeries. NICE has also agreed to convene an independent expert clinical panel to review recommendations surrounding the identification and diagnosis of type 1 diabetes in children. In addition, the Care Quality Commission, CQC, has updated its guidance so that GP practices are now required to have blood glucose testing equipment immediately available. This means that surgeries across England must now have blood glucose meters, in-date testing strips and lancets on site to enable rapid blood sugar testing when a child presents with symptoms suggestive of type 1 diabetes or diabetic ketoacidosis. Ministers and NHS England have committed to continue working closely with the Story family on their shared objective to ensure no other family has to endure the devastating consequences of a missed T1D diagnosis. In a separate development, the first drug that can delay the onset of type 1 diabetes is being made available on the NHS in England and Wales. Teplizumab is a form of immunotherapy that can give people up to 3 extra years before they develop symptoms and then need lifelong insulin treatment. NICE is aiming to fund the drug treatment for around 800 children and young people each year. Patients will qualify for the treatment following confirmation of antibodies identified by screening similar to the current ELSA study. You can discover more information about type 1 and living with diabetes on our website at drwf.org.uk, where there's lots of other guidance and helpful information, and details on how to support the charity, together with the latest fundraising events, news and information. This is Claire Levy from Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. Our thanks again to our guests, and also to you for listening to this latest edition of Living with Diabetes.
Living with Diabetes is a Blue Aurora media production for DRWF. Copyright 2026, Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. All rights reserved.